Welcome to episode 29 of the Fredcast for the week of August the 14th, 2006. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. In this week's episode of the Fredcast, I am not leading the news with a doping story. Instead, we'll be talking about the Clásica Ciclista San Sebastián race that just took place, the new rankings in the UCI Pro Tour, the next Pro Tour events, Lance Armstrong's advice to Floyd Landis, a Saul Raisin update, and much more. After the news, the Fredcast store is open. Cameron's story. The Fredcast gets a bike fitting. Some upcoming rides, some shout-outs, and as always, pod-safe cycling music. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder, because here comes the Fredcast. Well, welcome back to the Fredcast. Let's get right into the news, and I really am glad that this is not a doping story. Instead, it's a good story about an excellent race, and that was the Clásica Ciclista San Sebastián, which is a one-day Spanish classic that takes place in the Basque country of Spain. And this year's winner was a relatively unknown professional cyclist by the name of Javier Florencio. He's from the Bouygues Telecom team, and he's a Spaniard. And he won it against some very difficult competition, including some of the biggest names in professional cycling. Now, the way that he did it was quite interesting. He was able to hold off Stefano Garzelli of Liquigas and Andrei Kazechkin of Astana in the final sprint at the end of the race. The race was led for quite a long time by a three-man break consisting of Carlos Sastre from CSC, Denis Menchov from Rabobank, and Iban Mayo from Euskaltel. But they were reeled in with about 4 kilometers to go. And according to one of the riders, the problem was that there was a very big headwind. And as a result of them being reeled in, it set up the sprint, and it was a massive sprint with Florencio taking the win. Now, in eighth place in the race was Alejandro Valverde, and this was his first race since crashing at the Tour de France and breaking his shoulder, or his clavicle to be more specific. As a result, something you're going to hear about in a moment, Valverde is retaining his first place lead in the Pro Tour points for 2006. A couple of people who did not start the race, including Levi Leipheimer, who was tired after the Tour of Germany and his second place finish, as well as Oscar Freire, who was having some fainting spells. Also interesting to note that just before the race, there were 46 riders from 6 different teams who were tested for doping, and thankfully, all of those tests came back negative. So the general classification in the race came out this way. In first, Javier Florencio. Second place, Stefano Garzelli from Italy in the Liquigas team. Astana's Andrei Kazechkin from Kazakhstan. In fourth place, Russia's Alexander Bocharov of Credit Agricole. Fifth went to Christian Moreni of Italy and the Cofidis team. Also from Italy in sixth place, Mirko Celestino from Milram. Seventh place went to Ricardo Serrano from Spain and the Kaiku team. Eighth place, the aforementioned Alejandro Valverde from Spain and Cas d'Epargnier Isles Baleares. Ninth place, there's George Hincapie from the United States and the Discovery Channel Pro Cycling Team. And 10th place went to Italy's Franco Pellizzotti from the Liquigas team. With the end of San Sebastian, there are new rankings in the UCI Pro Tour. And before I give you those rankings, what's interesting to note is that I'm going to give you the first through fifth place rankings, but there's only going to be 4 riders. And that's because the person who would be in second place is Floyd Landis. And as we all know, as a result of his A and B samples coming back positive, he is on suspension from the UCI pending the results of the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency's investigations and USA Cycling's final ruling. So in first place is Alejandro Valverde. In third place is Frank Schleck from Luxembourg and Team CSC. In fourth place, Belgium's Tom Bonin from Quick Step. And in fifth place Italy's Ivan Basso from Team CSC. So you'll note, no second place rider was mentioned in that list. And if you look at the UCI Pro Tour's website at www.uciprotour.com, and there is a link in the show notes if you didn't get that, you'll see that Floyd Landis's name is not listed in the individual rankings anymore. Well, the next major Pro Tour event, the one that everybody looks out for every year, is the Vuelta a España, and that takes place August 26th through September 17th, one of the three Grand Tours, along with the Giro d'Italia and the Tour de France. But the next Pro Tour event is the Eneco Tour, and that takes place in Belgium and Holland, and that's going to be August 16th through the 23rd. So I'll be back next week with the results of that race as we get ready for the Vuelta a España the following weekend. As we've talked about several times here on the show, you can't go anywhere these days without somebody wanting to talk to you as a cyclist or a cycling fan about the Floyd Landis situation. And it appears that it's been very difficult over the last week or so to go anywhere without seeing Floyd Landis's face on TV or hear him on the radio. And Lance Armstrong has given some advice to Floyd in the last couple of days. He was quoted by the Associated Press as basically telling Floyd to lay low for a while. Armstrong is saying that he thinks that it's going to be impossible for Floyd to get a fair shake in the media, and that he thinks it's not a good idea for Floyd to try his case in the media, to let it take its normal course. And I think he's also reacting to the fact that Floyd came out initially and had a lot of different explanations for why it was that his sample came back positive. And those really seemed to backfire on him. And as I've read in a lot of your emails and in the audio comments, which I will be putting together into a show in the next couple of days, a lot of you are saying that you feel that Floyd's words are really hanging him more than the tests themselves, because whether it's because Floyd is lying, which is a possibility, or whether it's because Floyd gets nervous when he's on TV, or whether it's simply because Floyd has been poorly coached into what to say when he's being interviewed, no matter how it stacks up, nobody has had a very good impression of the way that Floyd has come across on television or in any of his interviews. So I think that Lance is probably right in saying, quote, in this day and age, you're not going to get a fair shake in the media. And I think he's absolutely right. So sounds like Lance's best advice that he could give to Floyd right now is to lay low and basically keep his mouth shut. And while Lance is encouraging Floyd to lay low and keep quiet, T-Mobile is refusing to do just that. Instead, they're going to get more proactive about testing their own athletes for doping. And specifically, they're going to be looking at what's known as autologous blood doping. And what that is that's the reintroduction of your own blood into your body to help you get a performance advantage. Now, this is different than the kind of blood doping that caught Tyler Hamilton. He was caught by what's called homologous blood doping, and that's the injection of blood from someone else. And typically, that's from somebody who has been at high altitude and whose blood is better able to transport oxygen as a result, thereby giving you a performance advantage. And according to VeloNews, the test that T-Mobile is going to be using on its own riders was developed by Walter Schmidt, who's a professor at the University of Bayreuth. And according to T-Mobile Dr. Lothar Heinrich, again quoting from the VeloNews story, quote, all riders will be required to undergo a newly developed test which will be able to determine whether the individual has transfused his own blood. Now, from the article that I read, what they do is they use a new way of detecting this blood doping that involves the riders breathing in carbon monoxide equal to about the amount of carbon monoxide that you would inhale if you smoked 3 cigarettes. The carbon monoxide will bond with the body's natural hemoglobin, and then the riders are asked to put on a breathing apparatus, and then blood samples are taken from their earlobes, and from those blood samples, they're able to determine whether or not these riders have doped. So this is T-Mobile's way of being very proactive about this doping that's going on in cycling. And remember, their star rider, Jan Ullrich, was not allowed to participate in this year's Tour de France. Not so much because he was accused of doping, but because he was under investigation, number one, for having been a part of the Operacion Puerto scandal in Spain, but also he was kicked off the T-Mobile team because of false statements that he made to them about whether or not he had any involvement with the doctors and the trainers that were involved in that scandal. So T-Mobile is trying to be very proactive so that they no longer have the specter of doping hanging over their team, and hopefully other teams will follow suit, because traditionally the UCI has been the ones that have been testing the riders. And now if the teams get involved, that will then take away some of the speculation that I've heard from some of you and also have been reading in some of the articles online and some of the cycling publications, the speculation that the teams have a lot more culpability in this doping situation in cycling than anyone else has focused on before. So by T-Mobile taking this step, hopefully other teams will also take the step and will be able to start rooting out doping at the team level, which I think would be a very, very positive development. Well, are you guys ready for some uplifting news? I'm so tired of all this doping. Let's talk about something that's just really great news and something I think you're all going to be very glad to hear. You know, for a number of weeks, a few months ago, every week I was giving you what I was calling the Saul Raisin update. And you'll remember that Saul Raisin is the Crédit Agricole rider from the United States who was very seriously injured when he had a crash at the Circuit de la Sarthe race early in the UCI Pro Tour season. And as a result of the crash, Saul was in a coma in France, and the situation looked very, very dire. And I mean, we were talking about, you know, giving out thoughts and prayers and all of those sorts of things, because it was such a dire situation. Well, a number of you emailed me, and I appreciate that very much. I got emails from listener Scott, who lives near Atlanta, listener Jose in Puerto Rico, and listener Mike, all of whom who pointed me to the same article that they read. And it was something that I had found previously, but I always appreciate it when you let me know these things. The great news is that Saul is doing much, much better. I told you that he was in a hospital in Atlanta, and now he's living at home with his parents. And last Tuesday, according to the article, his doctor gave Saul permission to take his bike on the road. Saul can only ride on level surfaces, but according to Saul, who last week got off his stationary trainer, was able to ride for an hour and a half with his dad was riding next to him, Saul said, quote, "It's the best day I've ever had on a bicycle. It felt better than words can explain. I had tears streaming down my face." So this is great news. Saul is doing really, really well and definitely getting back on his feet, getting back on his bike. And Saul says, "I'm getting a little bit of cycling fever. It's what I want to get back to doing. It feels good to be out here and see all the people with smiles on their faces." And he said that when he was at the starting line last Sunday of the Sandy Springs Classic. Now, he was just there as the official starter, but still, it was really an emotional event for Saul. Now, Saul still has a slight balance problem when he walks, and he does have trouble lifting his left arm over his head. And he's undergoing rehab twice a week and swimming almost an hour a day. Now, according to his doctor, he doesn't know whether or not he's going to make a full recovery, but, quote, "I fully expect him to live independently, to drive, to go back and finish school if he wants, and get a job. Whether he can compete as a world-class athlete or not is going to be a little bit of a long shot, but it's not out of the realm of possibility." So that's just fantastic news. You know, when he says it's not out of the realm of possibility, you know, if Saul has the kind of heart that it seems that he does to have gotten this far, and if a guy like Lance Armstrong was able to beat terminal cancer and come back and win the Tour de France 7 times, then hopefully Saul will be able to get back on his bike. Now, he is heading to France in the next few weeks. He's going to take his team photo with the rest of his Crédit Agricole teammates. And what's interesting is, all of his teammates have continued to stay in touch with him, including Tor Hushovd, who called him every single day of the Tour de France, including that last day in Paris when Hushovd won the stage. And according to Saul, and I'm quoting now, he said, "Saul, we won today. It took you across the finish line. I had your bracelet on. You look at the finish tape, and he has both hands in the air, and he had my bracelet on. It's amazing." Now, the bracelet that Saul is talking about is the one that was created to help support the center where Saul has been undergoing rehab, and it's the Raisin Hell bracelet. And I will put another link in the show notes so that if you'd like to purchase one to support Saul and support the people who have been helping him in his rehabilitation, you can do so. So congratulations, Saul. That's great to hear. And again, as I've said many, many times, we hope to see you back in the Peloton very, very soon. In another bit of Tour de France cycling news, Richard Virenc, who is the French cyclist who was the best climber in the Tour de France, a record 7 times, crashed during a 5-day amateur race in the Alps on Saturday, leaving him with a broken nose and 32 stitches in his head. Now, Virenc was a part of the Festina team that we talked about recently. That was the biggest doping scandal in the Tour de France before the Operación Puerto scandal. They were kicked out of the Tour in 1998 after police found large quantities of doping materials in their team car. And shortly thereafter, Virenc confessed tearfully to having actually used those materials. Now, despite that, of course, we do not like to hear that Virenc was injured, and we wish him our best for a speedy recovery. Well, a few weeks ago here on the Fredcast, I told you about something that the Discovery Channel Pro Cycling team was going to be doing, and they were calling this the Race to Replace. And of course, when we talk about replacing, we're talking about replacing who else but Lance Armstrong. Now, this wasn't just a publicity stunt. This wasn't obviously to really bring on a professional racer to the team, but it was also a fundraiser for the Indiana University Cancer Center, as well as the Lance Armstrong Livestrong Foundation. The final race was held at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway this last Saturday, and the final winner out of a total of 365 cyclists from 33 U.S. states competing in 4 different age brackets was amateur A.J. Smith from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. As the winner, he earns the honor of wearing the Discovery Channel Pro Cycling Team jersey and racing as an honorary member of the team for one day in the U.S. Pro Championships on September 1st in Greenville, South Carolina. In addition, Lance Armstrong led nearly 1,000 riders on a fun, what they called lap with Lance, around the old brickyard at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. And this was for people from ages 13 and up. Now, in addition to AJ Smith winning the overall, the results by age category are from the 18 to 24 age category, Bennett van der Genoot. I hope I'm not mispronouncing your name, Bennett, from Bloomington, Indiana. 25 to 34, there's A.J. Smith from Fort Lauderdale. In the 34 to 49 category, Christopher Gottwald from Vineland, New Jersey. And in the age 50-plus category, Daniel Waite from Dayton, Ohio. Now, according to Smith, he said, quote, "It was awesome. Once I heard that Discovery was putting on this race, I knew I had to enter. Despite 4 crashes and 2 knee injuries I suffered this year, I just knew I had to compete." So congratulations to AJ Smith for winning. We'll look for him in the U.S. Pro Championships in his official Discovery Channel gear. Congratulations to everyone who participated, and congratulations to the charities for earning money as a result of what sounds like a very, very fun event. Well, if you are a Fredcast listener in the state of Missouri, specifically near Springfield or Columbia, Missouri, it's time to listen up. If you've shopped recently at a pro cycle dealership, I think that you need to check your receipts. Pro cycle dealerships in Springfield and Columbia, Missouri are going to have to pay more than $114,000 in settlement payments to the state attorney general's office for the benefit of 364 consumers, and $84,000 to the state under settlements that they just made with Attorney General Jay Nixon. Now, the Attorney General sued the owners of the ProCycle dealerships in January because they apparently, well, it was alleged that they misled consumers by failing to disclose fees and charging an extra 3% when the consumers used a credit card. According to the AG, quote, "That becomes a problem if the advertised price and the bottom line price end up being greatly disparate. Our settlements today not only will return an average of $315 to hundreds of ProCycle customers, They will also ensure that ProCycle complies with state laws to protect consumers from fraud and deception. So what's the issue here? Well, the issue was that if you went into the store, say with an advertised price, you would get that price. But if you paid with a credit card, you would then be charged an additional percentage that was not disclosed to you previously simply because you were using that credit card. Apparently, there were also additional unexpected fees for processing and setup, and there were other costs as well. So check those receipts and see whether or not you are eligible for this program. But this just brings up the standard thing that you should all know, and that's caveat emptor, or buyer beware. When you get up to that register, make sure that you're being charged the amount that it said on the ticket or the amount that you agreed with the salesperson. And this is whether you go to a bike store or you're buying a car or you're simply buying a wedge of cheese at your local supermarket. Registers are, these days, computers. Computers can make mistakes because the humans who entered the information make mistakes. And if there are additional fees on that receipt, challenge those. If that wasn't something that was disclosed to you before you made the purchase, then go ahead and challenge it. You have every right to do that. So if you're in Missouri, keep that in mind. And hopefully this will be a lesson to other retailers, not just in the bike business, but in other businesses as well. You've got to disclose to the consumer what you're charging them for. These next two stories are going to seem sort of contradictory to you, but I think that they're instructive nevertheless. In the UK, a Daniel McCadden was fined £300 for fines and costs after a district judge found him guilty of what was called, quote, inconsiderate cycling. And what was it that Mr. Cadden did that was inconsiderate? He rode his bicycle on the street. He was stopped by police in Shropshire while cycling downhill quickly as he made his way home from work. The judge said that the cyclist should have known that by being on the road, he was going to be holding up the traffic, the motorized traffic, behind him, and as a result, he should have been riding on the bicycle path. Now, for his part, Mr. Cadden says that he couldn't ride on the bicycle path because it was slow and dangerous. Nevertheless, the judge found him guilty and fined him £300. Personally, I've been in this situation before where there is a bike path and then there's a street, and on the bike path, there are people walking their dogs, or pushing their children in strollers, or their families riding their bikes, and they're doing 5, 6, 7 miles an hour, whereas I'm out training, and I'm doing 17, 18, 22 miles an hour, and so I'm going to ride on the road. It's safer for me, and it's safer for the people that are on the bike path. Nevertheless, there's always that motorist who wants to pull up next to you, very close to you, of course, and scream at you because you should be on the bike path, at least in their opinion. Now, here in the States, at least in California, I can tell you that I have every right to be on the road, and I have as much right to be on the road as any of the motorists. Of course, I also have responsibilities. If I'm holding up traffic, I also have the responsibility to pull aside and wait to let the traffic pass before I continue to go. I don't know if it's that way in the UK, but it sounds like, at least where Mr. Cadden was cycling, it may not necessarily be that way. Meanwhile, if you'll go to the show notes and click on the link for the last story in today's news, you will find a picture of what's called a convenient tree. Now, personally, I would call it an inconvenient tree. This is a bicycle path in Lincoln in the UK where, well, you take a look at it. You can see that the bike lane veers off the road, and then there's an arrow directing you to get onto a bike path, which is on what we here in the States would call the sidewalk. The problem is, if you follow the lines, you head right into a tree. So on the one hand, they want you to ride on the bike path, but on the other hand, they're directing you into a tree. Is there an anti-cycling conspiracy going on in the UK that I didn't know about? And that's going to do it for the news for tonight. Well, several of you have asked me for this. Actually, more than several. I've gotten a lot of emails about this, and there's been some posts in the forum about it. You've been wanting Fredcast t-shirts. You've been wanting Fredcast souvenirs, and now you can finally get them. I've opened a small Fredcast store on Cafe Press. There's a link on the website on the top left-hand corner of the page, and there's also a link in the show notes. So what will you find there? There are t-shirts, sweatshirts, polo shirts, there's a messenger bag, and there's also a mug. And each of them, oh, and there's also a mouse pad. Don't let me forget the mouse pad as well. The mug is really nice. All of these have the Fredcast logo on them. And the mug says, I'm a Fred. The t-shirt says, it's got a little name tag. It says, hello, my name is, and it says Fred, and that's on the front. On the back, it's got the Fredcast logo. The sweatshirt, it's a hoodie sweatshirt. On the front, it says simply, very small and tastefully, I'm a Fred, and on the back is the Fredcast logo. And the polo shirt has a small Fredcast logo on the front left in the pocket area, although there's no pocket. And on the back, very small, just www.thefredcast.com. So go ahead and go online and check that out. Also, as you know, we have a contest going on right now. We are going to be picking randomly one listener to win a VDO cycle computer, and that's the MC 1.0 Plus cycle computer. It's a $160 retail value, and that's provided to us by VDO Cycle Computers as well as Ibex Sports, which is VDO's North American distributor. The contest is you have to send in an audio comment expressing your thoughts and ideas about doping and cycling, and specifically about the Floyd Landis situation. I've received a number of recordings, and I'm going to be editing those together into a show in the next couple of days, which I'll put out as a special Fredcast show, just with those listener comments. They're very interesting, and they're very thoughtful, and I appreciate every one of them. And they're coming in from all over the world, so that's great. So I'm going to extend the deadline just another 48 hours to those of you who would like to get your audio comments in. So you have until, we'll call it Wednesday, 6 p.m. Pacific time, and that's Wednesday, August the 16th, for you to get your recordings in, and then shortly thereafter, I'll edit them all together and put them out in a show toward the end of the week. So please get those in. But in the meantime, I do have another audio comment, if you will, that I would like to share with you. What I'm going to be sharing with you is the story of a young man by the name of Cameron. Now, Cameron's dad, Paul, is a listener to the show, and he sent me the following email. He says, hello, David. I've been listening to your show for a couple of months now during my 4:30 a.m. training rides for the Death Ride. And if you don't know what the Death Ride is, it's at www.deathride.com. And I think Paul and a lot of Fredcast listeners know, I tend to avoid rides with the name Death in them. But anyway, he says, I do enjoy your show quite an awful lot, and I do hammer a little harder, so that's great. He said, I just recently heard an update on the Livestrong ride in Portland, and that was the review that we had last week on the show, and wondered if you wanted one from Southern California. My son was diagnosed with high-risk leukemia at age 3.5 and just hit his 6th year of being in remission. He's been involved with cycling, Lance Armstrong, and the Lance Armstrong Foundation since he was 4, when he and Lance bonded at a Make-A-Wish event. They've reunited several times since. Cameron rode in Austin for the Ride for the Roses last year, and he did the 25-miler, and in Southern California for the Livestrong ride, he upped it to 40 miles. He also received the Livestrong Award for survivorship, and that's for someone who has had a positive impact on their community, and he got this at the Southern California Ride. Cameron has held 2 readathons a year at his and another local elementary school since he was in kindergarten. He's in 4th grade now, where he raises money for Lance Armstrong and other kids with cancer. At the Livestrong Ride in Southern California, he gave a speech when he received his Livestrong Survivorship Award, and I thought you might like to put the speech on your podcast to lift everybody up after all this Floyd stuff. And you're going to hear that in a moment. Cameron has benefited from his drug use, chemo, and is using it in a positive manner. He's a big Floyd fan and is trying to understand the whole thing from a kid's perspective. Cameron has a triathlon this weekend in Davis, California, and another charity bike ride next weekend that benefits the Livestrong Foundation. I'm going to put links to that in the show notes. So I thought that you might like to hear a really positive cycling story from the words of the cyclist himself. So ladies and gentlemen, my fellow Freds, I bring you listener Cameron, who is going to first give you a review of the Livestrong ride in Southern California, and then he's going to read for you the speech that he gave when he won the award at the Livestrong ride here in Southern California just a few short weeks ago. I hope you find this as heartwarming and as uplifting as I did.
Hi, I'm Cameron Stewart, and I'm 9 years old, and I'm a cancer survivor. And I did the Livestrong Challenge ride in Los Angeles. And we just want to tell you a little bit about it. This is my dad.
Hi, I'm Paul.
And I'm Cameron.
And Cameron, how far did you ride in the Livestrong ride?
I rode about 40 miles.
And what did you think of the course? What was your favorite part?
I liked the rest areas because they really had a lot of food, which gave me a lot of energy to climb up the hills.
Were the hills as steep as the ones we have around here?
The hills in Los Angeles aren't as steep as the ones in where we are.
Might have to have some Los Angeles people show us around, show some steep hills, huh?
Yeah. I really liked the ride. I hope I see more people out there in Southern California. Thank you, everybody. Live strong. I want to thank everyone at the Lance Armstrong Foundation for choosing me for this award. This is a big honor. I want to say thank you to all my doctors for helping me get through cancer. Thank you to all my friends and family for helping me raise money for cancer research. I also want to thank my mom for bringing me to the hospital every day and taking care of me. And I want to thank my dad for being really supportive of me and helping me get involved with the Lance Armstrong Foundation. He's also the one who taught me how to ride a bike. I am really proud to be a cancer survivor. Before I got cancer, there were lots of people who raised money for cancer research. They invented new medicines to help kids like me. I know that I was pretty lucky to have such great doctors and medicines to help get better. Now that I am a cancer survivor, I can do the same thing. I can tell other kids what it was like to have cancer and let them know how important it is that we can continue to raise money. I want kids to know that they can make a big difference. We can raise money to help make better medicines for all the cancers. Maybe kids in the future won't have to go through cancer like I did. Thank you, everyone. Live strong.
What an amazing young man, and what an amazing sentiment. One of the last things he said, maybe sometime in the future, kids won't have to go through cancer. And I think that's it. That's why we participate in these rides. That's why we wear the yellow bracelets. Cameron, you are an amazing young man. I am so pleased for you and for the victory that you have been able to achieve over cancer. And I wish you nothing but a very long life and a long life of cycling, of course. And I want to also congratulate your mom and dad, Paul and Kimberly, for raising a fine young man and for really helping Cameron through what was probably the hardest challenge of his life. And so I hope that all of you are able to go out and just enjoy each other for many, many years. Thank you for being listeners. And Cameron, thank you for sharing your story with the rest of the Fredcast listeners. We needed an uplifting story like yours after the last couple of weeks with this Floyd Landis situation. So thank you, Cameron, for sharing that with us. And now I'd like to shift gears for a moment and tell you about an experience that I just had, which was one of the best experiences in cycling for me off the bike. I had the chance to have a professional bicycle fitting at a store that I had heard about in a bicycling magazine article about a year and a half ago. And the store is located in Scottsdale, Arizona, and it's called Bicycle Ranch. What I read in the Bicycling Magazine article was something that I had known previously, and that was that simply going to a bicycle store, buying a bike, and making a couple of adjustments on your own simply isn't enough to get you a good anatomical fit on that bicycle that you've purchased. And as a result of that, I've noticed all sorts of issues with my cycling. Knee pain, low back pain, neck pain, occasionally numb hands. So just a variety of things that I know many of you have experienced as well because you've emailed or sent me voicemails about these issues. So I had the occasion to come to Phoenix, Arizona on business. Yes, I'm traveling again. And I made an appointment for Bicycle Ranch for after business hours when I knew that I would have the time to devote to what I knew was a very detailed analysis and fitting, but I had no idea how detailed or what an amazing experience I would have when I went to Bicycle Ranch. So I walked in and I met their professional bicycle fitting specialist, Chris, and we started talking. And I didn't even realize it, but I wasn't going to get on the bicycle for at least an hour, perhaps an hour and a half, because Chris took a total inventory of my bicycle, where every component was on my bike, what the various measurements between the components were, all the measurements of all the tubes and the frame geometry on my bike. And then we sat down and he asked me a long list of questions, all from the top of his head, because as Chris explained to me, he's probably done about 2,500 fittings. And a lot of his fittings are not just for local clients, but from people who come in from all over the world to have a fitting done at Bicycle Ranch here in Scottsdale, Arizona. So his questions included all sorts of questions about my medical history, any bones that I'd broken, any strains that I'd had, any medical issues that I have, how I feel when I'm on the bike, everything that would go into an analysis of how to properly fit the bike. And then he did a number of flexibility exercises so that he could gauge whether or not, for instance, one leg was longer than the other, or whether I had better flexibility on one side of my body than on the other. And this took quite a long time, and I learned quite a bit about how my body works, especially as a result of my cycling. And even before we got on the bike, Chris was giving me suggestions about, I'll admit it, doing a little bit more core work in order to strengthen up the core of my body in order so that I don't have low back pain. And one of the interesting things was that because my core isn't as strong as it could be, Chris explained that that's one of the reasons why I have back pain, because I'm trying to use those muscles where I should be using my abdominal muscles to keep my body straight. And because my back muscles wear out and get fatigued faster, as a result, I could be using my diaphragm to help supplement what my back muscles are doing. And then because of that, I'm not breathing as well as I could be when I'm on the bike. So it's amazing how all of these things fit together. So number one, he suggested that I do more core work. And for those of you that are interested, he recommended Mark Verstegen's book about core performance and said that that was probably the best book to help me get my core in better shape. But the other thing that he mentioned to me was really boosting my flexibility. And amazingly to me, here was a bike fitter showing me exercises that I could use to stretch my body in order to boost my flexibility. And this was all before we ever got on the bike. But then once we did get on the bike, by the time we were there, he had an idea of what the changes were that he needed to make. The changes included everything from changing the angle and the length of my stem, my handlebar stem, to changing the position fore or aft of my saddle, changing my seat post so that I had more adjustment in my saddle positioning, putting some shims under one cleat, changing my cleat position. There were so many changes that he made to the bike. It was really amazing. And this was all done on my own bike on a trainer so that I was actually able to spin. And one of the other things that he did before we started making any changes to the bike was he just had me ride on the trainer for about 5 minutes. And then he turned on a video camera and he videoed me just for the briefest amount of time. When we were done with all of the adjustments on the bike, he videoed me again. And then I got off the bike and we went to the TV and we looked at the before and after. And the differences were really striking because you could see how originally, and one of the things parenthetically that Chris found was that I have longer legs in proportion to my height than most men, but a shorter torso, again, proportionally than most men. So what he ended up having to do was he had to make the bike taller in order to compensate for my legs, but bring my body closer to the bars in order to compensate for my torso. So that when we went to the before and after video, it was clear that in the before, I was really reaching way far out there to grab those brake hoods. Whereas in the after, I seemed much more relaxed and I wasn't reaching quite so far. And so there were some real noticeable differences, both in my pedal stroke, in the position of my head and neck, so I could see why my neck was getting sore, in the position of my back and the curvature of my back and the really unnatural way that I was stretched over to reach those brake hoods. And so I could tell why my back was starting to hurt. Now then came sort of the depressing part, at least for me. And that was, as much as I love my Colnago and as happy as I am with that bike, one of the things that Chris pointed out was that because of the way that my body is shaped, and he pointed out that he's got the same exact problem, that an off-the-rack bike may not be the best choice for my body style because I don't fit into a generic frame or a generic measurement. And so he's recommending that while we have really made major changes in the bike, I can tell that I'm going to be more comfortable on the bike for long distances, which is important with this double century coming up that I'm going to be doing, that for long-term cycling comfort and in order to be sure that I have the right bike for me, that I might want to look at a custom frame. And so that's something that I'm going to be looking into and something that I'm going to be thinking about and, of course, negotiating with my wife. But nevertheless, I can tell that the bike is definitely going to feel better for me. And I'm really glad that I spent the time doing this. And I think it's something that I should have done a very, very long time ago. And for the amount of money that I spent, because remember, I had to buy a new stem, I had to buy a new seat post, and of course, the fitting costs money as well. For the amount of money I spent, I really feel like I'm going to get 3, 4, 5 times that amount back in the added comfort I'm going to feel on the bike, in the added efficiency, as well as in the really the coaching tips that Chris was able to give me that I think are going to really help my cycling in the long term. So I've put some links in the show notes that go along with this story. Of course, there is the one for Bicycle Ranch. I've also put a link in the show notes for the Core Performance website, as well as a link to Amazon.com where you can go and buy that book. Now, Bicycle Ranch is really one of the nation's preeminent bicycle fitting centers. And if you're interested, of course, you can give them a call. You can find them on the web. And you can set up your own appointment for getting your own bike fitting. But if you're not in the Western United States, there are other shops all over the country that have very good specialists in bike fitting. For me, I wanted the benefit of going to where I had heard was the best, and I really think that I did get one of the best bike fittings that is available. And I would urge all of you who are serious about your cycling, if you haven't had your bike professionally fitted, I'd recommend that you do it, and I will let you know over the next couple of weeks the differences that I have felt in my cycling as a result of this professional fitting. And if you do get your bike professionally fitted, feel free to let us know either by sending an email, an audio comment, or logging onto the forums and letting the other Fredcast listeners know how you feel about having your bike professionally fitted. And before we go, just a couple of notes, a couple of things that we do every show. I wanted to tell you about some upcoming rides that are coming up. And unfortunately, most of these are out on the West Coast. Sorry about that. These are just the ones that were in my notes for this week. The first one is this coming weekend, August 19th. This is the Midnight Madness ride in San Diego. This has been going on for 33 years. And we're getting this information from listener Dan. So Dan, thanks for sending this to us. It starts at midnight. You ride by San Diego Bay, Lindbergh Field, Point Loma, Old Town, and Downtown. There are all sorts of costume contests and lighting contests. And it gets kind of crazy. I've put a link in the show notes to it. It sounds like a fun ride. I don't know if I can get down there this weekend, but if I can, that would be fantastic. The next one, the same day, August 19th. This is one that I normally do, but this year, due to some family commitments, I can't do it. It's one of my favorite rides every year, and this is the Cool Breeze Century, and it takes place up in Ventura, California, and I've put a link in the show notes to it. They have routes of 38, 60, 100, and 124 miles, and one of the great things about this ride, on the last rest stop, popsicles. Great thing at a rest stop. I love that. Coming up on September 24th, the LA Wheelmen are going to be presenting their Grand Tour Light. This is a great ride. It is a double metric century. Did this one last year. Really enjoyed it up until about mile 116 when I crashed and ended up with a number of stitches in my right leg. Nevertheless, this is a great ride. Very safe. My crash had nothing to do with the route, nothing to do with the safety of the route or anything that they did. It was a malfunction on my bike. A bolt broke in my seat post and I went down and it was really ugly. But anyway, this is a great ride. September 24th, there's a link in the show notes. Next, something that I have a personal stake in and something I'm going to be talking to you about because of that personal stake over the next couple of weeks as it gets closer. And this takes place October 7th through the 8th. And this is the MS-150 Bay to Bay Bike Tour. And I've told you before that the MS-150 is one of the ways that I really got back involved in cycling and one of the ways that I became a hardcore roadie. This is an event that means quite a bit to me. I'm very involved in it. I've been a top fundraiser the last 4 years. I have also been on the planning committee. Last year, I was the safety chairman. This year, I am the planning committee chairman for the event. It is something very near and dear to my heart, and it is a fantastic ride. Of course, in addition to being the safety committee chairman, I'm also producing a podcast for the MS-150 Bay to Bay Bike Tour, and that's going to be coming out in the next couple of days. If you are in the Southern California area, this goes from Orange County to San Diego. It's a two-day event. On day one, you have the choice of riding about 60 miles or a century. There's a wonderful party that evening, and then the next morning, everybody rides the same distance, and it goes from Carlsbad, California, down to Mission Bay. Nearly the entire ride is on the gorgeous, beautiful Southern California coast. I've commented before that we have the honor and the privilege of getting to ride through scenery that most people only hear about in Beach Boys songs. This is a great event. It raises money for a very, very important cause. If you're interested, click the link in the show notes and sign up as quickly as you can because we are very, very close to selling out at our peak of 2,000 participants. However, do understand that if you do sign up, you are committing yourself to raising at least $350 for multiple sclerosis. Although, if you do sign up, I hope that you'll raise more. I also have a team on this ride. And if you are interested in doing the ride, send me an email and I will let you know how you can be on the team. It would be great to have you join us. If you don't join us and you'd like to donate to the cause, let me know that as well. And I will send you the link. That would be very, very much appreciated. Finally, the next ride that I want to tell you about that's coming up is the Las Vegas Century. This is October 21st, and this is another great event. And one of the things that makes it really, really great is the fact that it goes through Red Rocks, which is a beautiful area that there are no neon lights, no showgirls, no smoky casinos, and no slot machines. It's a wonderful, beautiful, natural area, and it's a great ride. I've also put a link in the show notes to the Las Vegas Centuries website. One ride that I mentioned last year, and I mentioned it when it was very, very close to starting, that is the Temple to Temple ride. And this takes place down in Belize, and it goes through a beautiful country, goes past Mayan ruins, and it is a race, but it's also a recreational ride as well. This is taking place January 28th through February the 3rd, and I mention it now because there are discounts for registering and paying early, and I've put links in the show notes. That's at www.templetotemple.com. A couple of shout-outs tonight. I wanted to send a shout-out to Alan in the UK, who sent me a great audio comment and explained to me about how the club run works. And basically, these are club rides in the UK. And he's a member of the Addiscombe Cycling Club. And I want to thank Alan for sending that in. Also want to say thank you to listener Mark in Rhode Island, who sent along some great information about Floyd Landis and about doping, and I have used some of that in my reporting over the last couple of weeks. Finally, I wanted to send a shout out to listener Robbie. Listener Robbie was the one who really got me finally to get off the stick and get that Fredcast store up on the web. Not only was he the one who did that, but he's also our first customer. So thank you, Robbie, for doing that. Very, very much appreciated. Now, the Fredcast store is just one way that you can support the show. Of course, telling your friends about the show, voting for us on Podcast Alley is another way that you can support the show, or clicking any of the links that are on the page for purchasing items, whether it's through Amazon or through Performance or Nash Bar or any of the other links that are on the page. Know that anything that you purchase through those links will send the tiniest amount of money to the Fredcast, and it will not cost you anything extra as if you had just gone to those websites on your own. But by clicking through those links, you will be sending a little bit of money toward the Fredcast, and all that money goes right back into the show to support the show that it seems so many of you love so much. So I'd appreciate you supporting us in that way. And of course, another way you can support the show is by communicating with me, whether that's to comment on something on the show or give me a suggestion. There's lots of ways to communicate with the show. The first is to use our email, and that's for your audio or text comments, and that's thefredcast@gmail.com. Of course, you can also send us an audio comment by clicking that audio button on the left side of the webpage and sending us an audio comment. You can use the Fredcast listener hotline at 206-203-FRED, or you can visit the website anytime at www.thefredcast.com. Tonight's PodSafe Cycling music is coming to us, as it always does, from the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. Tonight's artist is The Void, and the song is called Sirens. Links are in the show notes, not only to the PodSafe Music Network, but also to where you can find information on the song and the artist. So until our next show, which will not be at your regularly scheduled time, instead it will be early and it will be your audio comments about the Floyd Landis situation, I hope that you enjoy the music, but most of all, enjoy the ride.
down.